This is a previously recorded episode. This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Now, yes, hey, it's Mike Brennan, and my co-host Matt Rausch is up in the Upper Peninsula at Michigan Technological University, where they are actually opening up a new EDS Engineering Society of Detroit chapter. He was supposed to call in. He hasn't done so. I was a little nervous about that, whether he's going to be able to call in from up north, so we're just going to wing it here. Let me give you a few headlines, and we'll just sort of move into our program a little faster than what we originally intended. But hey, live radio, right? So I know this is going to be important for everybody out there, but NORAD, once again, is going to be tracking Santa Claus. They have a new website that goes live on December 1st for all you folks that want to get plugged into Santa's adventures as he's coming down from the North Pole. Of course, we don't have any good little boys or girls in this room. I'm not sure, but we might. But for all those other folks out there, an interesting website. You can check it out at mitechnews.com. It goes live tomorrow, and it has all sorts of North Pole features and things like that. Also, we have the various bills that are trying to get – there's a $5 billion data center that's going in Grand Rapids. Maybe if the legislature approves hundreds of millions of dollars worth of tax incentives. So there's some debate about whether that's going to happen, but it's moving forward this week, and we'll find out by the end of the month, end of next month, excuse me, whether or not this is actually going to be in Grand Rapids, where it's supposed to employ about 1,000 people. It's going to take 10 years to build out. It's supposed to really help West Michigan, come into the digital age as we bounce around in the studio here. Yes, we're good. That's a good thing, right? And I'm going to introduce a few people we have here in the studio. Again, Matt and I were going to talk about what was going on up north, but maybe he'll call in later and we'll fit him in somewhere. So Kathleen Norton Shock, one of the Diva Tech Talk. I got that right?
You did.
A little closer to the mic there, darling.
You certainly did,
Michael. Okay, good. She is actually going to do a couple segments this week. Just like last week, we had Dan Lorman and Richard Steenen focusing on cybersecurity. What Kathleen's going to be doing is focusing on what's going on with women in technology, communications, women entrepreneurs, and all sorts of other stuff. Right, Kathleen?
Absolutely. That's what Diva Tech Talk is all about, focusing on inspirational women.
Okay, and why don't you introduce your guests in studio? I'm sure they're very inspirational women, right?
I would love to do that. First, we have with us Rosemary Bayer. Rosemary is a longtime technologist, engineer, scientist, etc. She is also the co-founder of the first L3C in the state of Michigan called Arden Cause. And Rosemary, over the last 6 years, has become an expert on technology in the nonprofit space. So we'll be talking a lot about that. And then secondly, we have with us Carrie Pashlaw. Carrie is the president of the Northern Region for FastSwitch. FastSwitch is a rapidly growing recruiting company, but they also do a number of other things. And Carrie, in her world, is an expert on recruiting women in technology and technology in general.
Well, again, since we don't have Matt with us, and that segment's going to kind of get squoze in somewhere else, right? So why don't you go ahead and open up with Rosemary and talk about what's going on with Arden Cause.
That's great. So, Rosemary, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Okay, so one of the most interesting things, I've known Rosemary now for well over a decade, and one of the most interesting things to me, Rosemary, is that you have a very long, strong career as a technologist, an engineer, a global sales team leader for some powerhouse companies like Amdahl Control Data and Sun Microsystems, which was always very innovative in our space. Would you want to comment on how your career grew and progressed, and how did you get from working for those huge tech companies to co-founding something smaller?
Yeah, well, the first 15 years of my career, I was an engineer, a computer systems engineer, and an inventor and a designer of systems. And I used to tell everybody who would listen, it was the best job on the planet. It was so fun. Every day was different. Every day you were solving new problems. Always a great, great place to be. And then after being at those three companies, and I was at Sun Microsystems, which was just a marvelous place to work. And so unlike the usual move after 3 or 4 or 5 years, I wanted to stay there. And so I had to try some other things. So I tried to move into management. I went and got an MBA. And it turned out I was good at that. And so I stayed there and eventually did run one of the big global divisions, helped the company do really well. And along the way, my daughter went to college, and I had all this free time and kept starting to think about other things that I could do with my time. And volunteering was big on my list. And we started the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. And doing that, spending more and more time in the community and building community relationships and really trying to make a difference in a different kind of way became more and more important, and to the point where I wanted to do it during the daytime, not just at night. And so I started working on a plan with some of my best friends and co-founders, like Kathleen, started working on a plan to figure out a way to do that as a day job, not just as a hobby and not just as a volunteer job. And so the idea for Art and Cause was hatched. All Art and Cause does is serve the nonprofit community. As Kathleen mentioned, we are an L3C, which is a low-profit limited liability company or social enterprise. And the company itself is all about data. So we get to do the same cool tech stuff that I used to do in my old days, but we get to do it with a different kind of customer, which really feels good all the time.
Excellent. Excellent. What do you see, since you have developed this expertise in nonprofit technology, what do you see as the 3 to 5 most important trends in technology related to the philanthropic world?
Yeah, well, so we work all with data, and that's a good place to be because it's data, data, and data. Everything is about data right now. It's amazing in the short amount of time that we've had this company in 6 years to see the change in this industry and how all the organizations of all different sizes are more focused on data and getting more information. The real hot topic right now is about showing your impact. And so nobody's really sure what that means, except Art and Cause, of course. In general, they don't know how to do it. They don't know what it means, really, but they know they need to track things and they need to be able to talk about numbers. So showing impact is really the hottest topic, and that is followed immediately by and correlated with the trying to figure out how to use data to actually make your business better, whether your business is serving homeless people or whether your business is collecting and distributing food or whatever your services are. How do you use information to make better decisions about what works and doing more of that in a culture where information is not leveraged as much? It's not quite as valued as it can be in the for-profit world. So how do you take what is generally an industry built on compliance and just simple reporting to actually using data every day to make better decisions? So that's a huge movement. So improving their services, improving efficiencies. And then as you do that, you suddenly start looking at bigger needs for data, bigger needs for systems, enterprise-wide systems and connecting things. In the nonprofit world, everything's kind of built in silos. So each program is sort of self-sufficient, and they are created with funds to solve a specific problem, and those funds cover everything, including any infrastructure or IT. So a program will include people and donuts and a PC or two. And that's kind of how they decide what their IT strategy is. They often don't even remember to include software. They just include a couple of PCs or they don't really have a whole picture. And certainly they don't have an enterprise information strategy. So as we start using, helping that industry move to using information to make decisions, then you start to need information on a broader context or on an enterprise-wide context.
I'm going to pause for a second. I think we've got Matt, right, Dave? Is he there?
Matt?
Yes, I am.
Ah, okay, there you are. So
I have emerged from the North Woods and have a cell connection now, so greetings from I-75.
Oh, okay.
Hi,
hey, we're in the midst of interviewing Rosemary Bear from Art and Cause. Kathleen Norton-Shock's been handling that. If you want to leap in any time, feel free. But let me ask a quick question. How big is Art and Cause now?
Art and Cause now is 12 people. So we have been marching forward for over 6 years. We're 6 years, a little over 6 years old, and effectively doubling our revenue every year, which is great. We're still a low-profit company and a social enterprise, so we're not getting rich. But the people we have love working there because we love our customers and we love the problems that we're trying to solve. So we keep growing ourselves a little bit at a time and just continuing to expand our presence in this industry and in Southeast Michigan, actually outside of Michigan now.
Right, right. Art and Cause has some customers outside of the region as well. So in talking about solving problems, Rosemary, we have for a small company, we have a panoply of products. How did they evolve and how did they solve those customers' problems?
Yeah, it looks like a panoply. It's really not a panoply. It's really two platforms. As you know, information can be complex in that space. People are not accustomed to it. We really have two platforms. We started the company, did some research on what problem should we solve, and we really did focus on impact, which sounds funny. I started with that and how complicated it is, and people don't know what it means. But that's really important. We decided we were going to tackle this issue of how do funders of nonprofits and how do nonprofits themselves determine if they're making lasting change. And the only way to tell if you're making lasting change is to be able to track it and watch the changes over time. And that turns out to be a very new thing in that world. So we decided we were going to tackle that problem. So we built a tool called Cause Effects, which is a big data integration, data warehouse engine, and has visualization tools and ways that organizations can collectively, either multiple organizations or across multiple programs, across time, start to look at the impact, the actual changes that they're making and what happens to the people that they are serving. So it gives them that long view of, yes, we really are making a difference, or we should do more of this and less of that. So that was our first basic platform. And as we work with some of the agencies, especially the smaller nonprofits, we started off with the notion and some guidance that said they all have lots of data. Don't make them put data in again. Don't make a new data system. And it turned out that a lot of them did not really have any good data. They had some really bad spreadsheets, 100 columns, 200 column wide spreadsheets, and some really old Excel databases and big piles of paper. And so we ended up with a second platform called Data Snaps. Snappy little tool that's very quick to customize so that pretty much anything the nonprofits would need to track, clients and activities and assets or whatever they have, you can easily customize the system to become their system of record or their database of record. And it does basic reporting and dashboards and that kind of thing. That system can feed into the big warehouse or the analytics engine that we have. So the two things work hand in hand, but it also works all by itself for these small organizations don't really have a lot of resources for a big new system. And everything we do... One more?
I didn't touch...
Sorry.
Oh, good. Go ahead, Rosemary. It's Matt Roush. I was just going to ask a question. I just wanted you to give me some examples of who your clients have been, the ones you can, you know, disclose and everything. I'm just curious what kind of clients you've been able to attract to this system.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Matt. The warehouse, the engine, the analytics engine that we call Cause Effects, we use that in all of the projects that we do that are collective or community impact. So our first customer was United Way for Southeastern Michigan. We now have four projects there. And what we do for them is bring together, because, you know, they serve multiple agencies or they have lots of different organizations that they work with. We bring data from all those different places together so that United Way and the agencies themselves can look at that data and see what they're really actually causing or impacting the community. So we work with their high school, their Turnaround High School project, if you're familiar with that one. That was kind of visible to the community, seeing we get data every night. We get gigabytes of data every night from a whole group of high schools around the Metro Detroit area, and that all comes together and becomes analyzed. we have Reading Works, which is an adult literacy collaborative, and that's where we started the Data Snaps project, because some of those small agencies providing help for the literacy groups, they didn't have any way to track. So a lot of groups like that, funded groups, big funders, foundation funders, that kind of thing.
We have Jewish Federation of Metropolitan Detroit, Southeast Michigan Senior Regional Collaborative, Elder Law of Michigan, Oakland Family Services, Macomb Family Services. You can go to our website, which is www.ardencause.com, and just some of our customers are mentioned there. So, and we do describe to a certain extent which products they use, or at least generally what they're trying to achieve.
You got about a minute left.
Yeah, Rosemary, is there anything else you'd like to share with the audience?
I think that, for us, we are excited to look forward because we only do data. We only work with nonprofits. We have some new things that we're doing. The big issue about how to shift the culture so that you value data, so they actually make decisions, want to make decisions. This is a huge change in a whole industry all across the country. And so we think we are well positioned to help with that. We spend a lot more time now at the top levels of organizations, helping them to define in a bigger strategic way what's important to their industry and to the people they serve. And how do you actually get that all the way down to the bits and bytes that you can measure so you can see what you're actually doing and the change you're making in the community? So we're excited about that, and we feel like we're already a part of this sea change that's going on, and we're happy to be able to be a part of this community and helping make that happen.
All right. Well, we're done with that segment. We're going to go to a short break. Come back with a little bit more with Kathleen Norton-Schock leading the way. This is Mike Brennan. And Matt's out there somewhere, right, Matt?
Yes, I am. It's Matt Rauscher. This is the F-Squared TechCast.
Very good. Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rauch, and this is the M-Squared TechCast.
Yes, we can do this from anywhere. Where are you, by the way, man?
I am on I-75 in just south of the bridge right now in Sheboygan County.
Oh, way up north. Okay, good.
Yep, but headed back. We'll talk about that in a little while, though. In one of our later segments, we're going to talk about what we were doing today, the Engineering Society of Detroit. Ding.
That's right. We get the shameless bell. There you go. Got to get that in there. All right, good. Kathleen's got the second segment here. She has another guest, Kathleen Norton-Schock, one of the Diva Tech Talk ladies. We're working on a new format where we have a semi-permanent, rotational guest or something coming in at different points every month or so. And so you have a new guest, so introduce her.
Yeah, thanks very much. Just again to remind our listeners, Diva Tech Talk was created by three multi-generational women, a millennial, a baby boomer, I'm the baby boomer, and in the middle, a Generation X engineer from Cisco. And we focus on inspirational women in the technology field. And we all know, unfortunately, that there still is a dearth of women in that field, which is not good for the women and girls and not good for the companies themselves. So to that end, I have a guest today who I think will be excited to talk to. Her name is Carrie Pashlaw. Carrie is the president of the Northern Division of FastSwitch. FastSwitch, if I remember correctly, Carrie, is an IT recruiting company. Would you like to talk to us a little bit about what you do there? What exactly FastSwitch's main core business is, and what other initiatives are surrounding that right now?
Thank you so much, Kathleen. I would love to talk about what FastSwitch does and FastSwitch in Michigan. So the company, FastSwitch, we represent being fast, flexible, and creative in the IT staffing solution space. We provide direct hire, contract to hire, and contract services. We started out purely in staffing and then progressed into engineering and professional services such as bringing on resources in HR and administration and also in purchasing spaces and a little bit more. And what happened was we were so successful in the IT space, our clients asked us, well, gosh, can you help in this space? And you can help in this space. And we've grown from there. And in Michigan, we have been here for a little over 12 years and have grown from zero to 260. Company-wide, we've grown 500% in the last 5 years. We have a little over 700 staff members, and we're going to hit about $80 million this year, which is super exciting.
Can't call you limited profit, can we?
No.
So who are some of your major customers, Carrie?
We do, in Michigan, we do quite a bit in the automotive space. We do quite a bit in the healthcare insurance space. We're working with some of the top Fortune 20 companies, including Ford, Nationwide, Cardinal Health, United Health Group. And what we love doing is supporting clients of all sizes. So even though we're working with many in the Fortune 20 space, we also are working many startup, technology-specific companies, and we treat them all the same.
Wonderful. So since this is Diva Tech Talk is very much about role models, I hope you don't mind if I ask you a few personal questions, president of FastSwitch. Mm-hmm. How long have you worked there, and what was the progress of your career? How did your career evolve?
Thanks, Kathleen. I have been at FastSwitch for 12 years, and I've been in the industry for about 20-plus years. And my career progressed. I graduated from Western Michigan University. Go Broncos, if there's any Broncos listening. And in business.
Yeah, Matt is. Matt's a Bronco.
I knew I liked you, Matt. And I started out in sales. And early in my career, I realized that IT was where it was at. It was booming. It was growing. This is pre-Y2K for folks that even remember what that is and are old enough to know what that is. And I quickly moved into the IT space, gained my MBA with an emphasis on MIS, so I know a little bit about what I was talking about, and progressed since there. It is so fun, fascinating, innovative. All women should go into IT.
Oh, way to go. How long have you been president of FastSwitch? And after becoming president, were there new and innovative practices you brought to your own team?
Thank you. I have been president for a little over 2 years and was vice president for many years prior to that. A couple innovative things that I have done are in Michigan here, most of our sales and recruiting teams work remotely. And because we work remotely, we're busy during the day, but we have to make sure that we can connect within our team and work very closely together between the sales team and the recruiting team. So just a couple minor things, but I think that they've made a big deal, is we've set up a site called Spark. It's a Cisco site. It's free, and we can instant message each other as a group, as a recruiting team, and as a sales team. And it's a great way for quick communication, a great way to say thank you to team members, to share successes, to share stories without clogging up everybody's emails. And then another thing that I've done from a team perspective is I've instituted a hot seat in our weekly meeting. And if you ask my team, I'm not sure if they love it or hate it, but I will hot seat somebody on any specific topic that I feel is important that they know in our company. And it gives me a gauge on where they're at. Do I need to do more training? Do I have to have more communications within the team?
Wonderful. Now, along the way, you and I have talked about this over the years. Mm-hmm. We often find that women and men benefit from mentors. Mm-hmm. Do you have a few personal mentors? Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Sure. I have, as thinking about this as I was driving in today, I have a couple different mentors. One, of course, my first mentor is my father. He just taught me to be hardworking, to be honest, and just do a good job and be good to people. The other mentors, as I was thinking about this, really come from the vast women that I have met and the friends that I've made through the MCWT, the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. There are so many women that are strong leaders in IT in Michigan, and it's a great sounding board. If I have a challenge or an issue or a problem, I have so many people that I can reach out to and get their opinion, and that has been absolutely invaluable.
Excellent. So let's go back to your professional focus. What are the top three secrets of really excellent recruiting, Carrie? How do you do that as a professional recruiter, as a leader of recruiters?
So good question. And in today's marketplace in Michigan, in the information technology space, it is unbelievably challenging. There are so many terrific, fantastic, awesome jobs out there, and we just don't have enough talent. We need more individuals going into computer science in the colleges. We need people moving to Michigan. So it is a challenge for all companies. We actually, with the big three, do direct placement hiring because they have challenges finding the people, contract to hire. And in my opinion, the three top things, number one is hire and retain the best recruiters in the business. Number two is really to cultivate a community of referrals. When I go back every year and look at the statistics or my stats on where we find our people to bring to our clients, over 40% of the individuals that we hire about 150 to 200 people per year in Michigan alone. 40% plus come from our network. So that is a network through our recruiters, through our sales folks, through our consultants that might not be out there on the job boards. So really cultivating a community of people that want to work with you. And of course, by doing that, you have to be a, you know, upstanding company. You have to do right by your people, and that is key. And then the third thing is really using all the tools in your toolbox, not just looking at the job boards or looking at LinkedIn. Really going across all the things that you can do in recruiting space. Certainly LinkedIn, it's new. It's not the newest tool out there, but it is a wonderful tool for individuals to seek and find great talent.
Yeah, getting very robust. As we can mm-hmm. see, it seems to change now once a month. Do you do anything special to go after women?
Excellent question. And I get that challenge from our clients all of the time, particularly the top-end CIOs and VPs. When I'm talking one-on-one with them, they say this is the biggest challenge. They want to promote within, or they want to hire higher level and grow their women in IT, and they just don't have the individuals out there. So one of the things that we've done is we've set up a couple different programs, diversity-based, college-based, to get women while they're going to school, internships, whether it's in the summer or all year round, get them exposed and let them see that it's not always all about writing programs all day, which a lot of people think that computer science or IT is that, but that there's so much more, that they're solving business problems. And that's one thing that we do.
Interesting. I think some of the most interesting things have been happening over the last 2 years in this space. For instance, Intel is putting hundreds of millions of dollars now into diversity. Mm-hmm. Salesforce.com, Mark Benioff, just announced that he's analyzing all salaries in the company, and any woman that's making less than her male counterpart will be automatically brought up to that salary level. And again, we know in IT, these are fairly well-compensated jobs. So.
Tracy Ann will be glad to hear that, I'm sure, right? So.
She works at Cisco, Mike.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Tracy Ann Palmer hasn't worked at Salesforce.com in about 5 years.
Oh, gosh, I'm behind the times here, aren't I? So.
But I'm sure Cisco might adopt that same thing because they also have a very active women recruiting program and women fostering program. So you are finding that there is a dearth of females here in Michigan. Is that true throughout the country for Fast Switch, or is it just in your region?
true throughout the country. And one example, even though it's a local example, one of our fellow MCWT members, Rita Barrios, who's also a professor at U of D Mercy, I remember talking to her earlier this year, and out of something like 650 students that semester, it was less than 5% women.
Right, right.
In computer science, which just tells you the need. And then if I can quote my 10-year-old daughter, I have two girls, and so I always talk about technology with them. And my 10-year-old, who is Harry Potter crazy, says it's cool to be a geek. And I agree with that. It is cool to be a geek, and not all the jobs are geeky, but it is a great place to be.
Or as one of our friends often says, geek is chic.
I like that.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience, anything personal about your journey? Where are you planning to go next?
As an organization or personally?
Or Carrie Patchlaw.
Carrie Patchlaw is going on vacation at Christmas, so I'm excited about that. But a couple things that I want to share. You know, we've had so much growth as an organization, which is, I thank my lucky stars every day. But then in retrospect, I look back and I look at, wow, we have great clients that want to partner, which is fantastic. And obviously, we're providing them great service. But the key really is to put great people around you that are strong and work hard and care. And my last parting words really is the opportunities are out there. Join the IT force in the space, and you will have a wonderful career.
And, by the way, shameless plug, Carrie is also vice president of the Michigan Council of Women in Technology, an 800-member association, not just women members, although a majority are women. And you can find MCWT online at www.mcwt.org. Carrie, if somebody wants to contact you at Fast Switch, what would be the contact information?
Thanks, Kathleen. Well, my email is Carrie, which is Carey, at fastswitch.com, or they can go to www.fastswitch.com and look me up there.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Mike. Back to you.
All righty. And we're going to buzz out for a few minutes here, get set for the next segment, which we're going to bring in Greg Doyle, the manager of an Oakland County initiative called Tech 248. And what are we, Matt? Are you there?
I am here. I am deep in the North Woods, but still here. It's Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan, and you're listening to M Squared TechCast. Hey, it's Mike Brennan, and I think we lost. Is he there, Matt?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Yep, I'm here.
All right, we're back in again. So we have to say your name now. This is Mike Brennan. Yeah, there we go.
Matt Roush. Hey, I'm here. It's the M Squared Tech Cast.
Okay, I love this on the fly stuff. All right, well, we have with us in studio, we have with us Greg Doyle, who is the manager of the new tech initiative, Tech 248 in Oakland County. Welcome, Greg.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
So let's just assume. Well,
Greg,
hey, Matt,
Greg,
how are you?
I met with you about a year ago, I think, about Tech 248. So tell me what's new. What's been happening recently?
Well, great. Yeah, I remember that meeting. I don't know if it was a year ago. Time flies, doesn't it?
Yep.
So tell us about Tech 248.
Well, you know, for people that don't know Tech 248, it really started when we had a lot of tech company CEOs in the county, and we're talking Oakland County, that came to various different economic development managers at Oakland County and said, hey, is there anything that you guys can do to help us here in Oakland County grow our businesses? And we said, well, you know, what is it that you really need? And we really took a look at how big is tech in Oakland County, and it was really surprising numbers that we found out of that. Believe it or not, over 2,000 businesses, tech businesses in the county that employ two or more people. So it's a huge amount of small businesses that are doing a lot of really cool work in technology in the county. And then if we took that a little bit closer look and looked at all of the kind of the one-man shows that are in technology, that number was well over 4,000. So when we took a look at all of the surrounding areas, all of the other counties in Michigan, we were looking at more than twice the number of small businesses in technology than anyone else. Now, as far as employment goes, it was representing about 42,000 people employed in technology in Oakland County. So we were even stunned at the numbers when we looked at them that way. And we said, well, yeah, we better start to get a little bit more serious about this. And what we did was we convened some focus groups. We had about 20 CEOs from different tech companies across Oakland County. Of course, we involved some of our important partners like OU Incubator, Automation Alley, Walsh College, Oakland Community College, and I'm sure I'm going to forget a few, but we had quite a focus group of support organizations, economic development people, as well as CEOs from tech companies. And we went through a series of three focus groups to say, what is it that we can do? Where do you really need help? And coming out of that focus group, the real objectives, there were really three of them. The first one was that the CEOs in the community were saying, hey, we need help with guess. You can just guess. It was even covered earlier in our show, talent attraction. We're growing our businesses. One of the biggest problems we have is finding talent. And when we talked about talent attraction, we weren't just talking about trying to recruit kids from college. We were looking at how do you even involve students from high school. So, you know, a lot of comments we were hearing from CEOs is, boy, we got great technology programs, IT programs at the colleges and universities around here, but our students, they tend not to stay in the area. And they really think that the reason our students aren't staying here is they just don't know the great opportunities that are available. So talent attraction was the first objective for Tech 248. The second one was when we told our tech companies those numbers, that there were over 2,000 of them that employ two or more, they were shocked and surprised as well. And they said, really? We need help connecting. We need help being able to make connections for business, make connections to find new talent, to find new business opportunities, to collaborate on things. And the third objectives was, can you help us really kind of brand Oakland County as a globally recognized tech hotspot? So those were the three objectives. It was talent attraction. The second one was, can you help us connect to each other? And the last one was, can you help us brand Oakland County as a tech hotspot? So that's really how Tech 248 came together, how we came up with the name. Well, we kind of ran through a whole bunch of other names that were taken by Oakland, California, or someone else with an Oakland name, and we used that good area code that we've got, 248, and Tech 248 was born.
So how are you doing? I mean, in terms of all these different 3 points, are you successful at any of them so far that you'd talk about?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we had to figure out, well, how do we – what do we do about this? How can we really help? And so, you know, this – we're in our first year. And the first thing that we launched for Tech 248 is a series of meetups. So on a monthly basis, so every month except June and July, I believe, we've had a Tech 248 meetup at various locations across the county. We spend a good deal of time, again, with the focus group around how do you organize meetups and how do you do it in a way that's, you know, that's a little something different, because all of them told us we have more than enough opportunities to network. So we're not looking for a new networking venue. We're looking for something that's going to be successful for us. So the meetups that we've had are – we put some parameters around it. It's got to be in a cool space. So we've done meetups at places like Vector Forum in Royal Oak, and we've been out to the Oakland County International Airport, and we've been at Detroit Public Television, just lots of kind of different spaces. And we always try to involve youth. So we've had high school students that have participated in the meetups. We've had college students. We had a meetup out at OU Incubator. Of course, we had OU students there. And the meetups are attracting somewhere around about 100 people per meetup, which we think is pretty good. I think through the course of the year now, I've got some numbers here I jotted down. 1,156 people have registered for meetups. And so we've had quite a variety of companies and people come to the meetups, and it's really the meetups that we're using to try and make that connection. And also, as I mentioned before, we've got youth there, either college students or high school students, in contact with the CEOs of our companies. So we think we're making a dent on that. We've done some surveys after the meetups, and we just finished a survey of the members. And we're hearing really good things about the effectiveness of those meetups. And, of course, as we mature.
Greg, what about the branding part of it? What efforts are you making there?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've done some things on a couple of different levels. Of course, locally, you know, we, I think, have done a pretty good job branding the meetups and Tech 248. And we've also done some things in, you know, a little bit of digital media. We have our website. We've done some print media through you know, some of the Sky magazines at Detroit Metro Airport, Delta Airlines. So we're doing things like that to try and get the word out. And we'll continue to do more of that in 2016. Again, this was our first year, so it was a lot about just trying to get some legs under it. And I think we've got there right now.
How many active members would you say you have who actually show up at these events?
Well, there's two things. So you can register for the network and become a network member, and we have somewhere around 450 of those. And out of those 450, they represent 364 companies.
Huh.
So that's the membership. Now, basically what the membership is doing is giving us a list of companies that we can connect and we can send out information to. We can talk about what's going on in tech, opportunities that come up that we hear about, we send through the network. The meetups, you know, are kind of a separate thing. You register separate to go to the meetups, and we've had, you know, well over 1,000 people that have registered for the meetups in the course of this year. So not all those people have joined the network. We hope they do.
On a recurring basis, what would you say, 100, 200 people show up at your events every month?
I would say at the meetups, it's around 100. So that's been pretty successful for us. I think one of the big successes with Tech 248 has been the fact that we've involved the local communities. So when we talk to these CEOs about, you know, how do we connect and what do we do and how do we do these meetups, one of the things they expressed was, well, you know, Oakland County's big territory. It's a lot of geography. It's hard to get from Holly to Wixom out to, you know, Troy or Royal Oak or whatever it might be. And so we took a look at that, and from an organizational perspective, we divided the county into like five regions. And we then talked to the communities in each of those regions, and we said, would you like to participate in Tech 248 and collaborate with your neighboring communities to do that? And so they agreed to do that. We have about 24 communities that have volunteered to be part of the Tech 248 network. And so the communities, for instance, Royal Oak, Troy, Birmingham, Madison Heights, are all in one district. They all the economic development people from those communities collaborate to select a venue for the meetups, to market the meetup in their area. So it's a real kind of grassroots. And I think that's what's been successful as well, along with our Tech 248 champions who really help us market and talk to their counterparts throughout Oakland County.
Interesting. So what do you do in terms of in Oakland County itself? How do you reach out to all these folks that in the tech companies that may not have heard of what you're doing? How are you doing that?
Yeah, we have a couple of ways that we've done that. One is we've got tech248.com. A landing page talking about Tech 248 that anyone can go to. You can register. Also, we've actually done some of the good old-fashioned mailers as well. We've actually mailed postcards about the Tech 248 initiative to our tech companies. And, again, we've done, you know, local advertising and so on. So I think we're doing pretty good in the first year. You know, we've got about, I think I mentioned, about 364 different companies that are registered with the Tech 248 network. Well, we've got over 2,000 to go.
Yeah, Greg, I was just curious, what kind of companies are represented here? Do you have software, networking? You know, what's the preponderance of membership?
Yeah, of course, you know, that was one of the first questions, like, where do you draw the line here with technology? And it's really difficult. So
yeah, it's everywhere now, right?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if someone wants to participate, we're not going to tell them no. If you think you're in the tech world, you know, we want you to participate. But we did, you know, we did identify some specific areas, you know, companies that do some of the traditional IT things like network data and software development, but also companies that are into cybersecurity, game development. Digital media is really big in Oakland County. We've got a lot of great digital media companies, Connected Car, mHealth, mobile technology. Those areas were identified kind of as core areas that we needed to look at to identify these 2,000, right? We had to say, well, how do we determine what a technology company is in order for us to come up with these numbers that we've got?
Got about a minute left, Matt. You got any more questions?
I did want to know the digital media companies, the gaming companies. A lot of that was involved in the state film and digital media incentives. Have you seen a drop off in those companies after the end of those incentives?
You know, Matt, I haven't. I have not seen that. One of the things that really developed when our car industry unfortunately took a hit several years ago was this diversification that companies had to do in order to survive. And a lot of companies that were focused in that area went to digital media, and they went outside of the state to get some of their customers. You know, so we've got companies that are working with Disney in Apple and like you name it, Microsoft and so on. They're doing work for them. So I haven't seen that, Matt, but I don't have the statistics on it either.
All right. Why don't you give them that website address one more time?
Very easy. It's tech, TECH248.com.
And that's Greg Doyle, who's the manager of the Tech 248 Initiative for Oakland County. This is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Roush, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back
with Matt. And it's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Roush, and we're back with the M Squared Techcast.
Yes, and our guest this hour is Matt Roush. How about that? I like that.
Guest and host at the same time. There's something odd about that. I don't know what it is. Self-referential or something.
We make it work.
Meta and fractal at the same time.
So Matt is going to switch hats now, and he's going to be the PR director for the Engineering Society of Detroit, and you're somewhere on I-75 coming back from way up north, I think in Houghton, right?
No, we were in Sault Ste. Marie today.
Oh, okay.
ESD today launched a student chapter at Lake Superior State University, which is in Sault Ste. Marie. It is Michigan's smallest public university. It only has about 2,300 students, but wow, it has a very active and growing engineering program, mostly in mechanical, also in robotics and systems engineering. They have a really terrific robotics program there.
Okay.
And
go ahead.
We were up there today to launch a student chapter. ESD student chapters have been around for a while. There have been a couple of student chapters that have been on and off, sort of. One of them at Wayne State University that's been around for a while. But we've really made a major initiative to launch student chapters at the top 25 engineering schools, basically every accredited engineering program in the state of Michigan. We want to have an ESD student chapter there.
Hmm. And how far along are you with that plan?
We have launched chapters so far this year at Lawrence Technological University, Michigan State University. We just launched one at Michigan Technological University way up in Houghton earlier this fall. That may be why you thought I was in Houghton, because I've been up there a couple of times this year to launch our student chapters, along with Robert McGee, our executive director, and Heather Lilly, our director of membership. We're launching chapters later this year at the University of Michigan, both the Dearborn and the Ann Arbor campuses. We'll be launching at Ferris State University, Saginaw Valley State University, Western Michigan University, Grand Valley State University.
And hopefully all these folks then will, once they graduate, will stay in Michigan and do their work here, right?
Well, that's the idea. What we're going to be providing, the services we're going to be providing to our student chapters, is essentially sort of gap closure around career preparation. And it was interesting to hear your last guest talk about getting graduates to stay in the state of Michigan because people just assume that the opportunities aren't here. And one of the things we're here to tell you, we've got 140 corporate members at the Engineering Society that are crying out for engineers. They're crying out for people with engineering and scientific talent. There are, you know, huge numbers of job openings here in Michigan. I talk about our job fairs at ESD. We just had a job fair a couple of weeks ago on November 16th, and we had more than 50 companies there offering more than 3,000 engineering and technology jobs, and we had just a little over 200 people show up to apply for those jobs. So you could have had more than 10, like, at least offers, I guess, if you'd have been at that engineering fair. And believe it or not, as off as those numbers are, the exhibitors at that job fair were actually happy with the turnout and happy with particularly the qualifications of the people who showed up. There is a real dearth. Michigan lost a lot of engineers. I have tried like crazy to figure out how many engineers and people with scientific talent, engineering talent, left Michigan during the last recession.
Oof, and, had to be a lot of them.
in 2007, 2008, you had, unfortunately, the Detroit 3 shedding engineers by the thousands. And a lot of those people either retired or just left Michigan for good. Nobody really has a handle that I've been able to find on what that number is. But now that those industries are back, that's left us with a huge engineering shortage. And we've got to get the message through to kids, college kids, and particularly high school kids and middle school kids, that there are huge opportunities in engineering and that these aren't, you know, the boring, Flygrul pocket protector jobs of yesteryear.
How are you guys doing that then? I mean, obviously the student chapters is one way to do it, but are you doing other initiatives?
Yes, we've got a middle school initiative that we run called the Engine. It's Future City is what the middle school program is called. It is a program for 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. It's a national program. It's run by the people behind National Engineers Week, an organization called Discover E. And that's obviously the E you're supposed to discover is engineering. We run the Michigan program. We have 20 or 30 teams, 600 or 800 middle school kids every year. And what they do is they design a city set 100 years in the future. And they design that city on the Sim City computer game. And how well they do in the game is actually 20% of their score. They also build a scale model of their city on a very limited budget, about $100. So there's a lot of fun use of recycled material there. They do a written presentation on their city. They do an oral presentation or skit on their city. And all these things are judged. And we do Future City pretty well here in Michigan because our five-time defending state champion from St. John Lutheran School in Rochester is also a two-time national champion for Future City. And they were the best team out of 40,000-plus middle school kids across the country participating in this program. What that program teaches kids is that engineering, civil engineering, you know, it's not exactly what you think of as an exciting field, but it's actually really interesting in that you get to design and build, you know, a place where people live and work and play. And, you know, those are all real decisions that have to be made by real engineers every day. Kids learn that it can be a lot of fun to do that.
Now, there used to be some program that the state did called Mish Again, where they would go to Silicon Valley and Boston and other places and try to recruit folks who had some sort of Michigan ties to come back. I don't know if that still exists, but are you guys looking at doing anything like that, going out to where all these engineers are and saying, gosh, if you want to buy a house, Michigan is the place to be able to do it?
Yeah, and if you want to send your kids to school, the schools here are still pretty good, too. I mean, there is a great story to be told there. We're not involved in that particular program, but you know, we are among many organizations getting the word out there that there's a terrific quality of life to be had here. There is terrific opportunity to be had here. And when you look at the cost of living here and the cost of having to send your kids to a private school, the salary offer in Michigan starts to look like it's going to go a whole lot further than a job offer from California or someplace else.
Yeah, well,
I wanted to mention, too, Mike, we've also got a program for high school kids called Engineering Smart Michigan, in which kids design an energy-efficient home of the future. So they learn about the power grid, they learn about renewable power, they learn about HVAC systems, which is mechanical engineering. They learn about building systems and construction techniques and those sorts of things. So hopefully we're turning out some future engineers and architects to that program.
Okay, well, why don't we, if folks are interested in learning more about the Engineering Society of Detroit, all these student chapters you're launching, everything else, how do they do that?
They go to ESD.org, that is Engineering Society of Detroit at ESD.org. We also have a tech news website. Yes, I'm still doing that, so you should not only go to mitechnews.com, you should also take a look at my website too. That is techcentury.com.
Yeah, and we pick up some of Matt's stories, cherry-pick those, and then he promotes this show on his website, so a little cross-fertilization as we're going on. So,
absolutely.
Well, all right, well, I think we're going to wrap it here. Your battery is probably rapidly running out anyway, right?
Yeah, well, actually, I just got a brand-new phone, so the battery's in pretty good shape right now. So you want to do another hour? I'm kidding.
Dave's okay, looking at me like, cut, he's doing the cut sign here, you know? So, all right.
Next week, okay?
Yeah. All right, well, so thanks for joining us as a guest, Matt. And this is this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and this is the M2 TechCast that you can hear live every Monday at 3 p.m. and also by Wednesday at podcastdetroit.com and soundcloud.com, also on iTunes.
All right. See you next week.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode.